I'm John Ryan from the Work Healthy Podcast, and today we're going to ask the question, what does it take to create a workplace that delivers high performance outcomes and is an environment that employees actually look forward to working in? That's the topic, and we're investigating that with Valeria Segovia. She's Principal and Design Director with Gensler, one of the world's largest architectural design companies. They employ over 6,000 professionals across 56 offices and in 16 locations with clients in hundreds of countries. So they know exactly what's going on in this space, and we're delighted to have a conversation with them today. In an insightful and, I think you'll find, wide-ranging interview, we talk about why glass buildings can be a disaster, why bland should be banned, why flexible spaces are the future, and we discuss everything from toilets and windows, fresh air and light, how the gain of the office has to beat the pain of the commute, what different generations want from the workplace, and how the workplace affects your mood and performance, and importantly, how they can be made more accessible for people with disabilities. We also get some tips and tricks if you're on a budget in terms of how you can make and create a space where you can deliver your best performance and it doesn't even feel like hard work. I first asked Valeria how the world of workplace design has changed since the pandemic.
You know, the pandemic really gave us the understanding that people have the ability to change drastically so quickly. Like from one day to another, we were all working in our pajamas at home, delivering still what we're all delivering. So what that gave us, it really opened a window to another possibility in terms of how we work. And, you know, all of a sudden, everybody started to appreciate having the radio on and having access to the washing machine quickly to keep up with the activities from home. So what that did post pandemic, it just gave us the ability to have even more choice, and that it actually delivers when it comes to doing your normal activities. So, for example, we now know that we can go to meetings in person, that we can take calls, that we can work from a coffee shop, that we can take the calls in the office, we can take the calls at home, and we can have a meeting here and there. So there is an endless possibility of choice that will suit what the person wants to do in terms of their specific activity from work. So that means for us designers, we've really had to understand more than what looks nice or if it's an enclosed space or an open space, is actually neurodiversity. So what is going to make people more efficient, more focused, more perhaps have more energy and have more vibrancy to deliver a presentation. But that translates also in understanding personas, in understanding personalities, and have in workplaces having the capacity to cater for all this sort of I wouldn't even say work modes, but all these different needs that comes to very different range of people. So for example, I don't work very well from home. I like to have a little bit more vibrancy, more activity, even when I need to be focused. So I like to sit in an open space in the office where I see people coming, people going. Otherwise, I don't feel very efficient. So in terms of design, that has meant that we need to think about absolutely all the possibilities, enclosed, small, large, reflections, sun coming in, more vibrancy, less vibrancy. So, or we build spaces that are more able to transform, or we build spaces that have enough variety to keep people excited and to keep attracting talent.
So am I right in saying then that it's not, so there's no one size fits all, there's no perfect design for everybody. It's really about trying to understand deeply the people, the personalities, the kind of departments or the sub teams and what actually they require. So it's very specific.
Absolutely. And this is when it goes, it gets really interesting because us as designers, when we are delivering a design for a specific client, what we want to do the most is understand their business, understand how they work, understand what they stand for, understand how, if they want to change or they want to, you know, attract different types of people. So it becomes the detail to understand people and what you want to achieve.
So could I say, is the cubicle dead?
No. I think the cubicle for a call with a screen that has really good lighting where you can focus is great. The cubicle of the boss in his office, it will depend on the organization. Confidentiality, lawyers will need that. You know, but even lawyers are working slightly differently. So I think it depends. It really, really depends. What is, I think, dead is bland. Okay. Bland rows and rows of desk where you need to put your grandma's photo because to make it your own space and you hear everyone and everyone's on a call. And that for me is a difficult space.
Okay. And Magnolia is gone too, is it? Magnolia Wall?
Oof. Well, not according to Pantone, you know.
Oh, really?
I always tend to really look at what are the, you know, the colors of the year and things like that. And I mean, I'm not a massive fan of colors, but I know they play a really important role. And I say of colors, I'm being like a super annoying architect that loves materials as opposed to colors.
Okay.
But they play a really important role in how we relate to our backgrounds. So for example, that red wall behind me is doing certain things to you looking at it, less to me because I'm looking at you and things like that. And there's like a big kind of psychology study on colors.
I get that. So listen, one of the things obviously in the old style work, the boss got the biggest kind of office with the biggest desk, corner office with the big windows and the like. And then suddenly there was a move. No, we're going to change all that. We're going to become really democratic and the boss is going to sit in the middle of everybody. And obviously then everybody absolutely hated that because they didn't want the boss in the middle. So what's the thoughts on, you know, as an architect, somebody gives you carte blanche and they say, just give us a brilliant workplace that really works. What are the things that you're going to go after first?
Well, I think it's, you know, that's a fascinating question because there is a relentless focus on attracting talent.
Mm.
So it's no longer about the hierarchy of the bosses. And, you know, having the bosses having great spaces, it really is about how am I going to get the best of the best out there? How am I going to compete with others to just attract the best, regardless of the size of the practice? So I think it's creating spaces that are democratic and that are accessible for all, that's where the money should go, where all members of the staff have a joyful space, and then you'll get the best. That is for me no question.
Does this mean that the boardroom isn't on the top floor and that the canteen goes on the top floor, or what works there?
Well, I think it's difficult to generalize, but one of the things that I do see is, for example, in our studio in London, we completely reversed the diagram of the kitchen and the pantries and where you cook and everything kind of gets messy. So you put it at the back in the darker area. We've put it all in the front. We have a stair that connects the floors and we've put the kitchens facing where everybody circulates, clients, where everything happens to create the buzz, the interactions, so it's not necessarily that the boardroom is not at the top, but it's like the areas where everybody needs to be, those are the areas that need to have the energy and the focus and the extra thoughtful design elements.
Yeah, so I heard a term there, you know, the organization has to earn the commute of people. So if people are going through the pain of actually going to a workplace, there has to be gain. And what do you find are the things that people are most looking for in a workplace right now?
Well, I think there is, for example, one of the things that I see a big difference, for example, in the US and in London, for example, let's say New York, not New York, but I'm not going to give a city in the US because I'm being a little bit more general, but there is a big focus on the inside of the space and the building itself, delivering everything. However, in a city like London, it's the combination of the space and the content of the building and how the building relates to its context. So for example, if it's in a neighborhood that has so much vibrancy, let's say in Shoreditch, where you have coffee shops, you have little shops, you have the local thing, you have access to your, literally to a neighborhood that is rich on amenities, then the building can afford to work a little bit less hard. However, if it's a building that is a little bit detached, disconnected, or even from transport, that to get to the station is a little bit further, better be good. Because otherwise people know that they can work from home and that they don't need to travel so far. So that relationship that buildings, sometimes buildings leaning on their context to provide the other bits that they don't need to necessarily do, is not only unlocks a little bit of that part of the attraction of talent, but it creates a sense of community. And I think all the softer things that nowadays people would take for granted, nowadays are very much out there in the open, that we all want a bit of green. We want to connect with nature. We need fresh air, not so much aircon. We need beautiful light. There's an appreciation for everything that is nature, context, people, which for me is actually quite inspiring in terms of a move to architecture that will be more celebrated because it's getting the best out of people, as opposed to it's got a funky geometry.
And I'm interested to know from your research, is it the same requirements from the new generation versus people of all ages? Does everybody now want something, you know, funky and cool from the workplace? Or is that a particular need of the newer generations?
I think it depends. Like, I think there is a strong focus on character from all generations, on seeing the spaces and thinking, this is not just vanilla, and I can engage with it, and it aligns with my values. Where I have seen a lot of debate is in toilets. So
tell me more.
So we had before the traditional toilets that are male, female, WC cubicles, but with the sinks on the outside, traditional. Then there came some changes in regulations and efficiency, and there's a big focus always when you do office buildings on getting more area and occupancy and all of that. And there was a move to creating cubicles where you have the sink and the toilet in a cubicle. And those sometimes are not labeled male and female, so it's mixed. And that is very generational. When we talk to clients that are more traditional, they're like, we're not going to do those cubicles for everyone in the same corridor next to each other, male, female. What is that? That was the dialogue that, you know, and agents and developer clients and occupier clients were all having. What is best for us? What do people want? It's dirty. No, it's this and that. The debate has been crazy. Now there's a little bit of a change in regulation, which means that gender needs to be separate again. And it's a little bit like everybody's scratching their minds in terms of why are we doing that? And so it's going a little bit back to traditional layouts.
Okay.
Because of regs. And I think that's making very happy, I would say, the older generations.
Okay.
And the younger generations don't really care.
But I do remember Ali McBeal. I don't know if you remember Ali McBeal, or am I showing my age? Where
no, I remember.
Yeah, yeah. And they'd wash their hands together and chat together. And that was like kind of people going, wow, is that what they do in America?
Yeah, or in certain bars or hotels, restaurants, where it's like, oh, you wash your hands again. And I'm going to put my makeup next to and I think if you think about it, for example, in Scandinavia, that is the norm.
Okay.
That is how it works. Everything is mixed. There is no So toilets are a big thing in design of workplace.
And are you a fan of music in toilets?
Music? No. In bars, no. Yes. We haven't done music in office.
Oh, I think it could be, you know, there's noises that it covers.
Yeah. Loud music.
And so, because actually you mentioned Shoreditch. I was in a company recently in Shoreditch. And when I walked in, I honestly thought I'd walked into the wrong place because it was like walking into a nightclub. There was really deep jazz music playing in the background. The lights were really, really low. I was kind of going, is this a workplace? And it was. But it's amazing how just those initial impressions make you feel something and they affect your mood. And the people in that workplace were very proud of the workplace. So how much do you think...
Yeah.
That's the piece that matters, how it makes me feel about where I work and the organization I work for.
Oh my God, it's so important. When people can relate and align their values to the value of the organization, or not even necessarily the organization, but also the building. And sometimes this is why it's so critical, because the building will enable for culture, like a better culture.
Yeah.
And I love what you say about I walked in and it felt like a bar or like a club. And I always thought that after the pandemic, somehow everybody wanted to bring something from home to the workplace. It wasn't necessarily like the old fashioned way of like I bring the photo of my wife and kids I put it all there and I have my pedestal with my shoes. And it's not that. I think it's something that I get to feel at home, that I can have it where I work, makes me feel more human. And there's something about also feeling at home that removes stress and that removes the pressures of deadlines. And I say this because sometimes when I walk into our lobby here, and it's, you know, it's a simple design, exposed structure, a lot of timber, and the music, and this happens sometimes on a Friday, and the music is loud because the guys in the reception were like, I'm going to play this funky thing. And the music is loud and you just walk in and it's like, oh, that's lovely. I'm going to sit in the cafe with this music and focus on this drawing that I need to do. And it's the sort of thing that you would do at home. You would put like the radio because you need to focus on something. So, and it doesn't need to be the biggest thing, but if spaces enable for a little bit of that, that will bring people to a more human connection. Yeah. It immediately removes you from, I need to talk to the client or the boss or the something that stresses me out.
So it doesn't feel like work.
Exactly.
I think that's, you know, because I'm fascinated, like, the more workplaces I'm going into, I'm sort of going now, like, these are like boutique hotels and with a spa kind of thrown in with, because that's one of the trends I'm actually seeing. Obviously, a healthy place to work. Obviously, we're about healthy workforce and healthy organizations. But key to that is high performance and sustainable high performance. But I'm just interested to see what that move is that's going on, because the effect that, you know, the generations want to look after their well-being, and they want work to be somewhere that is actually good for them rather than detracting from their health. So how do you design a workplace that actually delivers that?
I think, you know, I think for me, the key thing is work really well with the elements. And it might sound really basic, but I was actually, before we got on, I was thinking like, someone like me that is really passionate about concrete, for example, I know carbon wise is not great, but I like old concrete that's already been built. I didn't build it. So, and that for some people can be really harsh and cold and might not like it. What would be a common thing that would bring us together? And that, in my opinion, is besides temperature, is light. So if you rely on, let's say it's old concrete, all battered down, and well, actually two things. It's, but the sun is coming in and it's hitting it and it's hitting right next to you on your table. And oh my, that changes everything. The space all of a sudden becomes beautiful. If on top of that, you add a lot of greenery, beautiful ferns and, you know, some large cheese plants and, you know, that starts to become even more beautiful. And if you layer in a little water feature, it doesn't need to be too big, but there's a little bit of running water, really deliberate. Wow. So for me, it's those things that bring people together. It's not necessarily the, do you like it because it's pink or do you like it because it's this architectural style? Is we like it because it gets us more in tune with what makes us feel inspired. And that, the only way to do it, I think, it's with natural things.
So this biophilic design, is that what they call that? Is that the right term?
Yes, yes and no. I think biophilic design goes beyond just nature. And biophilic design has also patterns that remind you of nature. But I'm just talking genuine working with the elements. And, you know, this is important because we have worked so hard in our buildings to seal buildings from water, to seal buildings from air coming in. And we are going to reach a point that we're going to have to work with it. If you think about how in Florida, they're starting to change regulations around buildings, because the waters are raising and they're starting to pull buildings up to deter from water and things like that. I'm like, okay, is there another way? Can we work with wet, lower elements of the buildings are wet and the water still passes through? Can we think about more air coming in? There has to be a different way. And that for me is incredibly exciting. Can we work with the elements better? Not to push them out, but to embrace them in and control them a little bit better.
Because it is one of the things, I mean, we see it all the time with the you know, the information coming back from employees. They generally hate the aircon systems and they don't want to sit in them all day. And I see in some of your stuff, you're talking about operable windows. Yeah. Is that something now that's sort of coming into vogue?
100%. And it's been coming in for some time now in office buildings. The idea of control and localizing how the very local environment where you are, being able to have a little bit of control, oh my God, makes people go like, wow. And with this idea of like bringing back the hospitality, if you think about staying in a hotel, I don't know about you, but for me, staying in a hotel where I cannot open the window of a room where I've slept, it's horrible.
Yeah.
And I think this idea of extended work, and it's not 9 to 5 necessarily, and the works are somehow different, being able to also feel more human and more like, this is my space. I can grab the handle and open. Oh, it's beautiful.
Because it is a problem that, you know, we talk to, you know, deliver results back to the organization. And half the people are saying it's too hot and half the people are saying it's too cold. They're going, what do we do? You know, so does that come up with, does that overcome that problem, really?
Yeah, very much so. We've just finished a building, which is a big cotton carve transformation in Covent Garden. And one of the things that attracts more people when we're touring and talking about it is the fact that all the windows are openable.
Mm-hmm.
And there is also a little sign on the inside that tells you when it's fresh. It's called fresh air time. And it tells you when there are sensors on the outside that tells you about pollution. Okay. So if the air is a bit toxic, don't open the windows. But you can open the window, and it works on both sides. If you kind of need to open the windows, fresh air time. So this idea also of the building working a little bit harder and smarter with sensors, helping you out to change your micro environment. So you open the window and your MEP systems will adapt locally, but they won't impact on the whole floor plate if it's an open floor plate, which is great.
Interesting. And so you as an architect, when you meet a hard-nosed CEO, right, who's all about the results, and you start talking about things like this, and they're kind of going, oh, hold on, Valeria, this is a business. We need to get results here. How do you kind of argue to sort of say that you're not creating a fun zone or a playground for people, and that this will actually end up with people performing better? How do you argue that case?
Well, with data. Data is always a really good one because it's, numerical, and you can show results of environmental conditions on the inside of the building that are more positive. So that's kind of like a basic one. We all know there's regulations. This is different in different countries, but lux levels that you need to have in lighting to a minimum to be able to work, as to use it as a workplace. So that's one. So doing floor plate studies in terms of lux levels that don't rely on electricity, that is like telling them you can have your lights off for longer, which means people are performing better, your bills are lower, and here you go, that's a number. So with things like that, for example, it's quite easy to show performance, to show lower energy spend, etc. I think where it's a bit less easy is when it comes to the things that are a little bit less tangible, like the music, all of that. However, we do a lot of surveys, workplace surveys as a company, worldwide, or we do it locally per cities as well. And that is also very helpful. And it covers from types of uses adjacent to office spaces that people resonate more. And we've had results like, even thinking about spaces like a library and spaces like gathering spaces, cafes, and all sorts of different types of spaces. You can assess it by asking loads of questions.
And so just I'm interested in screens wise, digital display screens. Are you a fan? Would you have them everywhere? Do you think they're cool? Or are they a bit passe?
There's the two ideas that's like me personally. Whatever is going to move me away from more information, like I'm on the phone, I'm on the laptop, and I don't need another screen, even if it's interactive, to get me to a better place. That's to keep me distracted or connected to something. I'd rather see a lot of green or put my face with the sun. And that is a little bit personal, but I've also had a lot of clients saying that, like, we don't need to get people more hooked to technology when it's not necessary to entertain them in a waiting space, for example.
Yeah.
But there's the others that get really impressed with immersive content. And that is like you must have seen like a core in a building with incredible waterfalls that, yeah, I mean, that's super cool, right? And it's, wow. Having said that, that was a few years ago. I think more now I'm seeing a little bit of a change to analog. Okay. And to even now, we're doing a building now that we're trying to express the idea of timelessness in the interior design, because it's sitting on top of the River Fleet and because it's sitting on top of a train track and it was a train station. So this idea of layers of time, and we decided to put a clock because it takes you back to, it's a station, but it's also this idea of time. And there was at some point a debate, it should be digital projected, like super cool. I'm like, no. We need an analog. People are keen on understanding process, how things are put together, the craft, the making.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
Yeah. My opinion is to get the best. It's like kids that are on the iPad all the time, they go to a funky zone. Like they get moody, they need their dopamine. If it's they want more sugar, they want the likes. But if you take them on a walk to the park with the dog, they're lovely.
Yeah.
And that's us humans.
Recharge rooms are becoming popular. Are you a fan?
Yeah, definitely. I think, I think it's the variety of the spaces. So if there's a space that can, you know, be like a wellness space that has like really soft furniture that can be also used, it could be multi-purpose. It can also be a prayer space. Mm-hmm. It could be a mother's room. But those perhaps rooms that get labeled as, you know, multi, but have the wrong finishes. Mm. And it's like a little weird room in the corner behind the core where you can sit down and hide away. I think that's not it. I think it's really careful lighting, is the right furniture. It's in the right location where if you want to go in, you're not seen by the clients, for example, or like. So positioning is important of the rooms and of the different places. Those types of spaces are very important.
And people I'm just wondering, disabilities, how important is sort of, you know, access and the like when you're designing a workplace?
Oh, incredibly important. But I think regulations take us to one level. And it's not enough. So it's not only about being able to access spaces with a wheelchair. There's all ranges. So it could be that you're visually, it's not that you can't see, but you see different, or you see the light differently, or there's certain textures that will make you trip and fall. And so the way actually regulations are catching up with that only now, where there's, for example, things where it's very strict, like visual contrast. So, for example, you can't have the floor the same color than the wall.
Okay.
And there's very specific numbers to calculate it's called LRV. So before you used to have like this monotone, beautiful materials that climb up the wall, and you can't do that anymore. You need to have visual contrast on steps, on walls, even like door to wall. So, which for designers is a change, because you need to really rethink how you do that. And you can't go on a really lovely concept of drenching everything. You just can't. And I think it's quite a nice moment actually to realize that more than ever there's a strong focus on on embracing everything in the workplace. Different learning modes, different ways of interacting with each other. And for that, I think design is playing a big role.
So absolutely, I agree. So the 9 to 5 is gone. The uniform is gone. The everybody do everything. Yeah. It's just like it's there's more personalization. The one thing actually about disability as an architect, I'd love. I find a great difficulty. I'm claustrophobic and I don't use elevators. And the amount of organizations I go into are hotels. And they kind of just go, oh, well, it's only up 5 floors rather than like, you know, a lot. And I'm going, I still don't use it. And so stairs, it's like, oh, no. You'd need a special key to get into the stairwell. Like, whereas I think stairs, there's a reason why they call them stairwells. Because if you use them a lot, you get fit and you get well.
Yeah.
So I personally would love to see architects actually rethink stairwells as really places to try and drive traffic.
I'll tell you what the issue is with that. And I'm a massive fan of, for example, here we have 5 floors in our office. I try always to, even if it's not to 5th, but my spot is on 3rd. Mm. They're big floors, so going up to 3rd, you're like out of breath, I promise. So I always try, and I'm a massive fan of the moments that you encounter people because you're bump into them on the stairs. Yeah. And that's really lovely. However, where it becomes very difficult is because buildings, commercial buildings, for example, where you have offices, you need to have fire stairs that are protected and that are fire rated walls and all of that. And so that means that they can be very beautiful and they can be, you know, put in a position of easy access, but you still have to go through a door. And you need to like go up, and normally because it's a regulation, it's a fire distance, they are not as pleasant because everybody wants to go through the beautiful stair that is at the entrance, and those cost money and they reduce area. And it's a very good point because for a long time we've been trying to justify that value and quality of space is not just a number. It's not a number like a square footage number. You gain it with the benefits of people connecting and cross-pollinating in their workplace, as opposed to going in the stairwell at the back, one floor, and they didn't bump into anyone, and you ended up with the 2 stairs that are teeny tiny. So investing on that stair that is open and integrating between office floors is massive, is so good. And that changed a few years ago, but it's still always a little bit of a debate, and now even more with fire pressures.
So I'm interested to know if I am on a budget, right? So I'm just, you know, no money, but yet I just want to, you know, I've got a workplace and I'd like to do it up a little bit. What are the kind of simple tricks I can do to implement straight away that will make a difference?
Yeah, that's a great question. For me, it would be about injecting clarity in the spaces. So for example, if you have, let's say 2 floor plates, it's very small, but you have a bit of a mess in a space that looks like there's workstations, but also people eat there and, you know, and the kitchen's kind of adjacent. I would be like, no, let's do the workstations here, the kitchen, even if it's just moving furniture.
Okay.
Adding clarity and purpose to the spaces. Or maybe it's a floating wall that you can, you know, put in a location to not subdivide the space, but like maybe partition it a little bit. Mm. There's things that you can use also to get a really good punch on the space, like environmental graphics. So for a space to look...
What do you mean by environmental graphics?
So that's when you see spaces that are perhaps really... low budget, sometimes a thing that you do is you go with really funky text on the walls. and with a message, or it could be really small and it could have some lines. So environmental graphics is adding graphics on walls, on floors and ceilings, and you can be very clever, and it's just a little bit of paint or arrows or a thing that indicates food or things like that. And it could be that amplifies it to make it look a little bit more design and taken care of, or even add clarity to the spaces. But for your question, so the key ingredients on how do you make a workplace better, I would say clarity and very clear purpose on the different spaces. You can jazz it up with funky fonts, plants, but really well taken care of. Nobody likes to see a yellow dying plant. You can kind of two or three, but very beautiful.
Plastic plants are gone, are they?
Completely gone. That is the aspect of biophilia that I don't agree with, for example. That's why in your question before, I was like, no, no. Because, they might give you a sense of, it's plants, but it's fake.
Okay, it's got to be real.
It's got to be real, and beautiful light. Like, open the, whatever, it, if you have access to light in those floors, amplify it as much as possible. If not, get some really great lamps. Okay. That could be like floor lamps that feel very cozy in those corners when you have like a reading corner with a great sofa or things like that, or a little bit more punchy when you need areas for work. Okay. Those are easy things.
One of the things I'm interested in, like pre-pandemic, like if I had told you that I want you to, you know, bring your work home, you'd be going, I'm not going to do that. But if I told you that I want you to bring your bed to work, you wouldn't be a fan of that either, right? But what I'm starting to see now is, because so much money is going on trying to get accommodation, and particularly in professions like nursing and the like, where they're not paid an awful lot, I'm seeing some hospitals now trying to, like in universities, build on accommodation to their workplaces. Do you think that's something that's okay to do, or would you like more separation between those two things?
I think this is where there's a little bit of a generational, perhaps a generational mindset change. I think the younger generations are more keen in drawing the line and focusing on their well-being and their family and having things a little bit more separate. I think even like my generation and even millennials as well, so Gen X millennials are more into the merging.
Okay.
And to work, for example, I'm the kind of person that I think my work and life, there's kind of not that many boundaries, and I extend and I can take the work home and it's fine, and I can take a call in a weekend, and it's, life is changing. But that generation, the Gen Xers, I think they're very much that it's like career driven people. They merge it all. But I think it's now, it might be a little bit of an inclination on creating efficiencies, but I don't think for the younger generations that's the best in terms of what we're seeing.
One of your passions, you were telling me, is kind of repurposing buildings and sustainability and the like. And it's interesting because I was reading one of the reports on your website, and it was sort of saying the problem in a lot of cases, these buildings just aren't easy to, you know, turn into residential, for example, and like, and they're sort of saying because of light, because of plumbing, because of all those things. And then the solution was, well, actually, maybe we can make these co-working places. So you have the central stuff in the center, but all the offices and the like are at the sides. Do you see that as something that's going to evolve?
Yeah, 100%. I think for me, this is where I love the idea of the buildings adapting, not necessarily to the way we think about different uses, but thinking about the way we use things. So the boundaries between what is hotel and office and residential, I think we need to think beyond, and there's spaces in between. And those areas of overlap are quite interesting. So for example, the example that you're giving of these nursing homes maybe creating a little bit of residential, maybe it's not called residential and it's called like second home or like my home in the meantime. And and it's it creates a mindset change about, okay, hold on. I don't need to love these four walls that are actually very small to feel okay, because it's temporary kind of thing. So I think, and for example, in the building transformation of transforming uses, sometimes when you have a really deep floor plate that was an office space and you need to make it a hotel that is quite shallow because you need all the light in the room, what happens in all that additional space? It's quite interesting, because can we think of something similar like data centers or, you know, spaces that don't necessarily require light? So this idea of merging things in buildings in a different way, I think it's not only interesting, but it's the way we have to think about design. And because we are changing all the time how we use our buildings, but the profession is taking a little bit longer to adapt. And a key thing is, for example, the value of residential and domestic houses, how that changed in the pandemic. All those spaces that had a teeny bit of outside, gardens, balconies, oh my God, they were so expensive. Nobody wanted to be in a flat or an apartment that didn't have an outdoor spot. That different, and this is the pandemic is a perfect example on how quickly the way we live and the way we use spaces changes. It's crazy.
Yeah.
So our spaces need to be more adaptable.
And using the roofs of you know, and, yeah. and planting little forests on the roof, I like that. So I just cannot believe that the time is gone. It's ridiculous.
It's been so fabulous.
Really enjoyable. So thank you so much for that. So then in kind of summary, I'm just wondering if you could actually tell me, what do you think, when you look back at all the designs over time, what are the design disasters, right? And then obviously on the other side, what are the ones that you'd point to that you think that's really good? They nailed it there.
Oh my God, yes. So it's a great question. I don't think necessarily pointing at a disaster per se, a specific building, but I do think that there is a time in an era where we decided to build in a certain way. So for example, there is a lot of glass buildings that have all facades doing the same and not necessarily working with the sun. This was for a very good reason. It was to inspire people to have beautiful views, to create presence in the city, to, you know, have a little bit of a statement. And who doesn't love a beautiful view to a city or to wherever? So that is something wonderful. However, what it does do is that it attracts, it doesn't deter the sun the way we used to build them. So there is heat loads, which means that there is more need to pump up the air conditioning. So these becomes built, they become buildings that are very, very needy in terms of operational carbon. There has been innovation when it comes to glass buildings. For example, there is a system called CCF, which stands for closed cavity facade, which is basically glass, then there's air, and then there's glass. And there's a little pump that throws cool air, and that means that the heat doesn't go through the glass. That's great. That has been, you know, a really good piece of innovation to achieve glass buildings. However, it's still very needy in operational carbon, which means it's still quite heavy to maintain it. So regulation, at least in the UK, has changed and has moved on and has actually created like a lot more heavy requirements, which means that we can't very easily build glass buildings anymore. We need to calculate energy models, which means the transmittal of the heat for the U values, calculation of the U values, which is this heat transmittant, which means you need to have more solidity in the building. So this is something where the industry and the construction and the design is changing in a really, really good way, because it means that we really need to interrogate how the sun is traveling and heating the facades so that buildings don't get really hot. And also they're easy to maintain and they don't require too much air conditioning. So I think even though it's been a bit of a learning curve, I wouldn't say necessarily disaster, a learning curve for the construction industry, we're getting there. It's a positive. But we're now seeing in building transformation that all these glass buildings, we need to change them, we need to make them work harder, and we need to hack them a little bit to perform better.
Okay. And then on the other side, pointing then, to kind of, you know, really good design, what would you see?
So, and this might be controversial because I know everybody has an opinion, but I would say a really good example of really good design is a building like the Barbican. So the Barbican has all the things that, that was built in the 60s, and it has now all the things that people are looking for now. It has water features, it has green, it has public spaces that are outdoors and indoors, it has culture and activities, it has community, it has beautiful views. And it's standing the test of time really well with the two towers that at some point were the tallest residential towers in London, because they are made with enough solidity to the point before there, you know, there's a lot of concrete and they're also very beautiful. So I think this relation of culture, which everybody's so hungry for because it's inspiring, nature, and innovation when it comes to building that stands the test of time is something that for me is incredibly compelling.
Fantastic. And you know something, the one thing I often think when I'm traveling around the world and you come back home and you go, what are we leaving to, you know, other generations? Because when you see the architecture that different, you know, the Victorian, the Georgian or whatever, and you see what they've left us, which is beautiful buildings. The question is, are we doing the same to the next generations coming? Hopefully, thanks to you and people like you who think so progressively about this, we're leaving buildings that we'll be really proud of. But listen, thank you so much for taking the time out to chat to me today. Thank you.
It's been such a pleasure. Thank you so much.
What an interesting topic. I could personally talk about it all day. I think the design of a workplace is so important to drive the behaviours that you want and obviously to have high performance culture. Now, our next podcast interview is probably the most interesting that we've ever done. Join us when we're joined by the CEO of Carlsberg.